Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode. I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind, but there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is the show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Jeremy lives near Corpus Christi, Texas, with his wife, Jennifer. In May of 2018, just a few months ago, they experienced a day that neither of them will ever forget. This was on a Sunday, about 10:30 in the morning, and they were getting ready for a family barbecue that was going to happen at their house that afternoon. Jennifer was working in their rock garden, and she came across an aggressive snake. But it wasn't just any snake. This was a Western Diamondback rattlesnake. She called out for Jeremy, and he quickly got a shovel and swung down on the snake and chopped off its head. And of course, if that were the end of the story, it wouldn't really be much of a story, right? Well, a few minutes later, Jennifer's about to let the dogs out in the yard, so Jeremy knows he needs to dispose of the dead snake. As he reaches for a nearby stick, the severed head of that rattlesnake jumps toward him and bites down on his right hand. Jeremy immediately yelled for Jennifer that he's been bit, and he struggles to pry open the jaws of the snake to get it off his hand, all the while feeling the pulsation of the deadly venom that's being pumped into him. Jennifer called 911, and they got in the car to meet the ambulance a couple of miles down the road just to save some time. Now, I'll let Jeremy tell it, but what I find fascinating about this story is how life can end so suddenly and without warning. I mean, Jeremy was just doing routine yard work on a Sunday morning, and literally within 15 or 20 minutes, he's waiting for an ambulance to show up, and he's thinking there's a good chance he's about to die. And he's saying his last goodbyes to his wife and his daughter. Just incredible. Partway through the conversation, we'll hear from Jennifer, and the fact that she's a nurse, I think, played a big part in Jeremy being able to survive this. On the website, I'll have pictures of Jeremy, as well as his email address if you want to contact him, and that's at whatwasthatlike.com/11. And you can see additional pictures about this story on my Instagram, which is whatwasthatlike. And now, let's hear the whole story from Jeremy. Jeremy, have you, before this happened, have you ever been bitten by a snake before?
No, never.
So this was the first time you hit a home run, huh?
This was the very first time, yeah.
Wow. So tell us about how this happened. Your wife, Jennifer, is just working out in the yard, and were you in the house at the time when she...
No, I was outside mowing grass, and she was working around in her garden, pulling out weeds and different kinds of things, and she stumbled across the snake, and it didn't rattle at her or anything. It just kind of sat there, and then it started coming after her and kind of freaked her out, cornered her up in the corner of the house, you know, and was striking at her. So I jumped off after she yelled and come down to get the shovel, you know, to try to scoot him out of the way, but he was striking at my wife. So, you know, like any other person would, you know, it's...
She was cornered in the...
Like he was cornered outside, yep, up against the house and in between the garden area.
So she couldn't go anywhere without going past.
She couldn't go anywhere.
Oh, nope. Man. So you came in as the knight in shining armor with the big shovel. So you literally decapitated this snake.
I did. After trying to scoot him away, he was too aggressive and just wanted to bite something. So I cut its head off, tossed him to the side in the garden, and... You know, we figured it was done then.
You're in Texas. It's pretty common to see snakes, right?
It is pretty common here. Rattlesnakes are pretty common. Yeah.
Okay. I'm in Florida. We have rattlesnakes too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Have you seen them on your property before?
A rattlesnake? No, but we were camping down here when we first came down to Texas, and there was one on the front porch of our camper when we come outside, just a little baby one. But I hear about them all the time. I see them in the roads, driving up and down the road. You know, they're out there.
Mm-hmm. It's just something you got to be aware of.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So you came over and chopped the head off of this snake, and obviously that put the snake out of commission. He wasn't moving or attacking anymore.
I mean, he was squirming around like, you know, something like a chicken with his head cut off.
Okay.
But he wasn't striking at anything anymore. You know, the head was laying there. The body was separate. The body was still wiggling. You know, we thought that was over.
So as far as you knew, he was completely dead.
As far as I knew, he was dead. Now I've learned that you dig a hole and you bury that head first, you know. But, you know, I figured it was okay. Done deal. My wife yelled out to me, say she was going to let the dogs out. So that was after she'd been in the house for a while. So I reached down to grab this stick laying out in the garden because I got little dogs. Reached down for that stick and... to move the head off the sidewalk, and before I even got to the stick, the head was on my hand, and it was probably a foot or better that the head and what neck was left jumped onto my hand.
It moved a distance of about a foot to get to your hand.
About a foot to get to my hand. Yeah, I actually probably left too much neck on. There was about 2 inches of neck left on that, inch and a half or so, and in the blur of the moment, from where my hand was and that stick was laying, it was darn near a foot.
So, wow.
And I seen it turn around and look at me, you know, which I just chalked off as, you know, strange. But then the next thing I was doing, I was peeling the snake off my hand.
And how long after you had decapitated it, did it strike you? How much time had passed?
It was working on probably 10 minutes. She went inside, started doing some stuff. I was about ready to go back to mowing. So, you know, it was a blur of the moment thing. Kind of, I'm not sure exact time, but it wasn't immediately.
Yeah, but you figure after 10 minutes,
this deal
is all done, you know?
Absolutely. And not turn and look at me, that's for sure.
So it bit onto your, was it your right hand?
Yep, and grabbed onto my right hand, and it got a hold of my middle finger first, and I finally got it pried off after a couple minutes of struggling with it. Well, then somehow got a fang into my ring finger and I let go and back at it again, trying to peel off. So I stuck my fingers underneath of its front of its mouth and between the fangs, got it flipped off of there finally. And by that time my wife was running out, you know, cause I'd been yelling, I'm bit. Mm-hmm.
What did it feel like immediately? I mean, was it like a pin sticking into your skin or?
It was like somebody drove a horseshoe stake into my hand. It was an intense amount of pain and it felt like my whole hand was taken over, almost like a stake being driven through the middle of my hand. And then 30 seconds after that, I started going numb, could barely walk. I mean, it was an immense amount of pain. And I could feel the venom going in, which made it even worse. You know, I could feel it I could feel his mouth pulsating and things working, you know, and my hand filling up with junk, venom, you know. So it was strange.
Yeah, because it's more than just the tooth of an animal going into your skin.
Absolutely.
It's the venom that is. Now, so Jennifer obviously heard you calling out that you've been bitten.
Yeah.
And she's a nurse, right?
She is a nurse, yes.
Okay. So what did she do when she first came out?
Immediately she assessed the situation and she looked at me and knew that immediately I had to get some help. So she dialed 911 right away while she was trying to get me to the car. She stayed level-headed and focused. She does. I mean, she's great. She stayed level-headed, tried to keep me. She was talking to me. I was talking to her, you know.
So the tables kind of got turned.
They did.
I mean, first you were saving her. Now she's saving you, right?
Yeah. We're each other's knight in shining armor for sure.
All right. So you got in the car and the plan was to... She was on the phone with 911.
On the phone with 911 and dispatch told her to meet us down at the road. You know, we were going to go to Lagardo, which is a couple miles away, to meet the ambulance. Well, the ambulance, I ended up going out of it and things quit working. I could no longer see. I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't talk. She said I started going into seizures. I can remember coming to in the church parking lot while we were waiting on the ambulance. Some guy, first responder, came out of the church and he was doing chest rubs and stuff to try to keep my heart going. By that time, I was a mess.
You weren't really even fully conscious.
No. We got down 2 miles down from my house and I was already going in and out of consciousness.
And a lot of that is because you got really more venom than just a typical snake bite.
Right. I did. Yeah. Usually a rattlesnake will give you a warning shot because venom is real precious to them. So had I left the head on, we probably wouldn't be sitting here today.
It still would have been serious, but
yeah. But maybe I could have got out of there in a couple of days instead of the whole ordeal.
Right. But because it was just the head, it automatically shot all of its venom.
It did. I took every bit of its venom. So they said that was a real bad thing to do, especially a snake that size. He was in between 3.5 and 4 foot Western Diamondback. So that's pretty big head to take all that venom because they don't have the shut off capabilities. And it's just kind of a fight or flight. You know, they're going to give it their all that last bite. So,
right. Wow. So you went down and met the ambulance and the plan was they were going to transport you in the ambulance to the hospital?
Yeah. They were on the to meet us, you know, as wherever we could meet because they wanted to get us on the road as fast as they could. So they were dispatching out of there. They met us at the church. They assessed the situation. I don't know how long time went by. And we were sitting in the church parking lot waiting for the ambulance, which seemed like it took forever, you know, coming a couple miles down the road. And everybody was working on me. I can remember going in and out of it. I can remember talking to my daughter and telling her, you know, I don't know that I'm going to make it. I love you guys. Please, you know, please go on. You know, it was sad, you know, because I could tell my daughter was crying. My wife was, you know, in tears and everybody was scared. I was scared too.
I made a decision a long time ago. When I'm out riding my bike each morning and I cross paths with someone, I always smile at that person. And most people smile back. But I do it because even though it's a little thing, it makes a big difference for me and maybe for them. It's just a fact. Small actions can bring big benefits. In the same way, it's also true that taking care of your gut can support the health of the rest of your body. Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic benefits not just your gut, but your skin and heart health too. Seed DSO1 is part of my morning routine. If you can call it a routine, it's just two little capsules. And I feel amazing. It helps maintain the health of my heart, and it promotes regularity, which I can attest to. Sorry, that may be a little TMI there. For me, it's great that it's vegan, but it's also sugar-free, soy-free, peanut-free, gluten-free, and has no preservatives. It doesn't even need refrigeration. DSO1 has so many benefits, including the fact that it's backed by a lot of science, but I've barely scratched the surface here. What I can say, though, is that my body feels great, and I've got a promo code so you can see the benefits for yourself.
Trust your gut with Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic. Go to seed.com/what and use code 25what to get 25% off your first month. That's 25% off your first month of Seed's DSO1 Daily Symbiotic at seed.com/what. Code 25what.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%, so I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking Try Free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon. How old is your daughter?
My daughter is... she's 22 now.
Okay. So she went with you in the car. I didn't realize that.
She actually drove and met my wife and I at the church.
Okay.
You know, because she was, I don't think she was here. She was at home, but she only lives about 2 miles away where we would turn to go to town.
Wow. That's got to just, I can't imagine being in a situation like that.
No.
All of a sudden, I mean, you're working in your yard. You were planning some kind of a family outing later that afternoon.
Yeah, we were going to barbecue that afternoon. Yep.
And now you're telling your wife and your daughter that you may not make it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I can't imagine going through that.
No, it was horrible. And I can't imagine, you know, what they were thinking too. You know, my personal thought, I thought I was going to be it, because just the way my body felt and the way my chest felt, I mean, I chalked myself up as done, you know.
And obviously you'd never felt those symptoms before.
I never have, you know. I've felt a lot of horrible things in my life, but never to that extent like that.
So this is where a helicopter came, or did you get in the ambulance and begin
traveling? They loaded me up in the ambulance and they began traveling. So we traveled about 7 miles to a town called Orange Grove. And in the ambulance, by that time, they had to pull over because they had to dispatch the helicopter. They said I would no longer make it if I had to go in an ambulance to the hospital. So I don't know how long we sat there. By then, that time, I was out, you know, but my wife said it was only like a minute or so when the Halo flight landed. I can remember getting on the helicopter, you know, and then in and out of the helicopter ride. I remember, you know, my bowels hurt horrible. You know, I thought I was just having a bowel movement. Come to find out, you know, I was pouring blood from every hole that I had, because that venom just turned everything to mush.
It affects every system in your body, right?
It does. Yeah. So I lost a lot of blood.
Hey, this is Scott jumping in here. At this point in the story, Jeremy is pretty much out of it as he's being transported to the hospital by helicopter. So I asked his wife, Jennifer, to record some of her thoughts and what she was going through at that time and for the next few days as Jeremy was put into a coma, as the doctors did everything they could to save his life. So we'll hear from Jennifer now, and after that, we'll get back to the rest of my conversation with Jeremy.
So as a nurse, when we first got into the car, I was just really worried because I knew he needed the antivenin pretty quickly. I had never actually dealt with a snake bite in my nursing career, so I didn't know how bad it could get. But within 2 miles of getting down the road, he got really bad really quick, and I knew that it was not going to be a good situation. So 911 instructed me to, there's a church just another couple miles down the road, and they had a sheriff meet me. So that was the first responder he was talking about, was actually a sheriff. And he's the one that was helping, trying to keep him when he'd go out and do the sternal rub to keep him awake. I didn't know, honestly, what to expect because I had never dealt with a snake bite before. Just 2 miles down the road, he just says, "I can't see." I said, "You can't see." And then he went out of consciousness. He slumped over. And so I was telling 911 he slumped over. So I'm driving with one hand, phone on my shoulder, and then trying to rub him on the other and get him to wake up. I had to do that several times before we got to the church. He was bad. He had a couple of seizures and just kept going in and out. And I honestly didn't know if he was going to make it. They didn't get his first dose of antivenin to him until 3:30. So the bite happened at 10:30. He got his first dose of antivenin at 3:30 because there's a process for mixing it, apparently. So that it took a while. There was a lot going on up to that point. But the doctor in the ER pulled me out and he said, "This is a really grim situation. He's really in bad shape." And he said, "We're going to be getting ready to move him up to ICU." And so that's when it hit me that I didn't know if he was going to make it, because the doctor did not look very good when he was talking to me about it. They did take him up to ICU, and within like 5 minutes of them calling me back there that they already had stuff ready to set up to intubate him. They said that his organs were already starting to shut down. He was in septic shock, and they wanted to put him into a coma while they could still control it, because they didn't think it was going to be very long before his lungs were going to start to shut down. So they wanted that to be controlled. So that's at the point that they put him in a coma. The doctor came in about 3:30 in the morning, because they had him on, his pressures could not stay up. So they look at what they call the mean arterial pressure. Has to stay above 65 for your body to pump the blood to the organs. If it gets below 65, that's when you can pass away from that. He was constantly between 50 and 60, and they had him on 4 vasopressor IV medications to try to maintain that, and it wasn't working. So the doctor pulled me out of the room because he said, "I know that they can hear, you know, when they're in a coma," so he didn't want to talk in front of them. And he did tell me that they've done everything that they can do. He explained the arterial pressure issue, the meds he was on, and they did not really think, they wanted to prepare me because they didn't think he was going to make it within the next hour. I was pretty stressed at that point, and I ended up going back into the room, and I remember the nurse, she was working on IVs or something, and I grabbed his hand and I said, they tell me that you're going to die. You need to push that venom out of your body, and or find the venom and push it out of your body," is what I said. And literally within 30, 45 minutes, his pressure started to come up, and it just got better from there. I really believe that if I hadn't, I know the nurse looked at me like I was nuts. Why would you be saying that to him? But I believe that if I hadn't have said that to him, I don't think he would have made it. With his pressure starting to come up, they were able to start decreasing the vasopressors, but it took several days before they were actually able to start like getting rid of those medications one at a time. They would get one gone and then they would start decreasing the other. The second day, he hadn't had any urine output. His kidneys had completely quit. They were just monitoring the labs on that. And then, so the end of the second day is when they told me that they were going to have to do dialysis based off the lab work. So I gave the okay for that. And they actually did that the next morning, got them all prepped for that because there's a, you know, a certain type of IV they have to have in for that. They did several blood transfusions because he was bleeding internally pretty badly from that. So he had several blood transfusions. And they had him on two really high-powered antibiotics to try to fight off with the septic shock, just the infection basically getting in the body. They hadn't really done anything with his hand at that point. They just kept it on a pillow, kept it covered because it was very swollen and had very large pockets where the venom and fluid had collected. So it had some really big pockets in his hand. And it was not until Thursday that they did the try to wean him off and wake him up. Basically, Thursday is when he was stable and his labs had, because they said they had to keep doing the anti-venom and they worked with poison control. Yeah, the hospital worked with poison control, calling every couple of hours, going over lab work, deciding if the next dose of anti-venom had to be given over that course of time. By Thursday is when the lab work started to level out. It wasn't improving, but it wasn't decreasing anymore. And so that's what they look at to decide if the anti-venom's working. So Thursday's when they decided they could pull him out of the coma and started decreasing his meds for that. So I saw him come out of the coma. They had to reduce his medications to basically wake him up. They have to leave the tube in to help breathe, and they have him breathe also so he can try to breathe over the machine. And that's how they decide whether or not he can safely come out of the coma completely. So once they did that for about an hour or so, and then they decided that he was good enough to pull the tube out. And so that's when they pulled the tube out. And they did ask him if he knew what day of the week it was. He thought it was Monday. So he thought it was the next day, even though it was Thursday. He was very disoriented. He didn't remember the snake bite. So we were kind of having to remind him of what happened. It took several days for him to actually put it all together and remember everything that had happened.
Do you remember anything while you were in the coma, hearing anything or anything at all?
I don't remember anything at all. You know, I'd like to say I remember, you know, her talking to me and I can hear this voice, and I don't remember absolutely anything.
Part of what she said was when they told her that you're probably not going to make it. And yeah. She came in, and the phrase that she used is she told you, you have to push that venom out of your body. And of course, you may have heard it and just not remember it now, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I feel that you can hear things, you know. I didn't remember it, but I'm hoping I heard it. I must have, you know, because it was either death or push that venom out.
So when you first woke up, obviously you were a little, or maybe a lot, disoriented. What was that like when you came out of the coma?
It was like being at a, circus. You know, when I was conscious, everything was just had a different turn on it. You know, the lights, it was strange. It was like a big dream. And it took quite a few days for me to even asking her every day, what happened? Hi, what are you doing here today? You know, am I getting to go home now? I was pretty.
But you knew you were in the hospital, though.
I did. But I, even at that time, you know, even being in the hospital, you know, I would think all of a sudden, you know, I was waking up out of my bed at home, and I'd be right back there in the hospital. So it was real strange for, you know, the first few days were pretty bad.
How long was it before you kind of got oriented again to, so you knew what had happened and what was going on?
You know, after about the fourth day of waking up from a coma, you know, and some of the swelling going down, I started to realize what was going on, you know, and then it hit me and the severity of the, you know, the issue is kind of hit home then. You know, I could see, I could focus more, you know, and then, you know, I'm sure I was on quite a bit of pain meds, so they were kind of falling off, so I could stay more focused at that moment, you know, but it was just strange.
It's got to be strange just to wake up and realize that 4 days has passed that you didn't even know they went by.
That was really weird. That was very weird. Yeah, because I thought it was the next day, which was Monday. You know, I thought I knew, you know, in my mind, I knew I'd been bit, you know, I thought I was home and done by now. But yeah, when they told me, and they had to tell me a few days in a row, you know, what was going on. But yeah, it was real strange, because I lost, you know, almost a week by the time I was focused again.
It's got to be, did you feel any sense of relief? Because, you know, when you were back there getting ready to get on the helicopter, you were kind of saying your last words, your last goodbyes to your family. And now you're awake and you're alive still.
Yeah, I felt a definite relief, you know. I'm glad I woke up. I'm not sure why, you know, what my purpose is yet, but something's out there, you know. Maybe there's something, yeah.
You know, I read that a typical snake bite, rattlesnake bite, typical antivenom is 2 to 4 doses.
That's right.
But you were given 26 doses.
26 doses to get me back to normal, you know, where they could manage my health.
And even with that, it was still touch and go. Like,
it was.
You were right at death's door.
Yeah, I was definitely. And then, I mean, even the anti-venom caused problems, you know, with my kidneys, and just the high dosage of the combination between the venom and the anti-venom, you know, just gave me a whole new set.
Let's talk about that, your recovery since then. Now, this happened in May, right? At the end of May. Mm-hmm. And as we record this, we're in the middle of November. So it was several months ago.
It was.
What happened from the time you got out of the hospital? What ongoing problems did you still have when you left the hospital?
I spent quite a few weeks in the hospital. Like, you know, they had me on dialysis for quite a while. They were trying to save some of my fingers because it was starting to deteriorate and the bone was starting to show. And eventually I had skin just hanging and just a raw bone sticking out of my finger. Yeah, that's right where the bite was. Yeah. And, you know, the snake's now got a clean mouth. So you get all the bacteria plus the venom plus, you know, everything mixed. It was starting to, what do you call that? Gangrene in my hand. So they put me in a hyperbaric chamber, and I did that every day for a couple weeks. And
what's a hyperbaric chamber?
A hyperbaric chamber is they take you down to a low pressure to take all the pressure out of it. It's like going, I think they said it's like going 100 feet underwater was what pressure I was at. And then they pump it full of oxygen. It's supposed to help, you know, it's supposed to help your body regenerate, you know, being at those pressures. But it didn't work. Before that, they actually did a skin graft. They took a skin graft from the lower belly and tried to skin graft one of my fingers that was going pretty bad. Well, the skin graft didn't take, and then that's when they started the dialysis. So I did that for a while, and they couldn't get it fixed. You know, I went to my hand doctor, the surgeon, and he tried to take care of it, and eventually he's like, you know, your finger's got to go. We got to take it off before it causes any more infection inside, because I was on pretty powerful antibiotics and, you know, still having problems. So I got rid of that one, and it was healing up pretty good. And the other one,
that was your middle finger.
That would have been my ring finger. Yeah.
Okay. So you lost your ring finger
first. Yeah.
Okay.
And then the skin graft on my middle finger didn't take. So after about, it's probably a couple weeks after the hyperbaric chamber, they decided just to go ahead and take it off. Cause it was strange. You know, it was just, my knuckle was broke right there where you bend it at the knuckle. So it was just hanging there with a piece of meat, you know, in the bone. And then I had raw bone sticking from my knuckle of my hand out to the first knuckle of where my skin was attached. So you could see it just start eating down into my hand. So they wanted to get rid of it as fast as they could.
Now, was all that exposed or was it bandaged up, or could you just see it all the time?
You know, they had me come in for like wound care for a little while, and they found out that my wife was, you know, as high as a nurse she is. So they let her do the wound care at home, which, she was great at, you know, she did better wound care than the wound care. But, we kept it wrapped up, but he didn't want anything tied over it. He still wanted to breathe and everything. And, you know, I just couldn't get it wet.
I'm just wondering if when you describe it, you know, with your knuckle being broken and the bone showing and everything, did you ever get used to seeing that?
I got used to it, but when I fling it around a little bit, my wife kind of got a little sick at it. That used to be her thing, you know, I'd flick my finger around while I was just hanging there, but that was just to entertain myself, you know, because it was a pretty hard time anyway. So I kept positive and funny, and you know,
you gotta. I mean, in a situation like this, you gotta find something to laugh about, right?
Exactly, absolutely. You know, yeah.
Even if it's dark humor. But
well, and then they took those. By then, I was off of dialysis. You know, which I'd trade fingers for kidneys any day. You know, because I'm already diabetic, insulin dependent. So just
before this whole thing, you were diabetic?
Yeah. The whole process of the dialysis was, it just scared me, you know. It scared me more than the snake bite itself, seeing all them people in there fighting for the last, you know, their last pieces of life. So I think that helped kickstarted me into, you know, just focusing on my health and trying to get, you know, back. Then after that, you know, I came home and I was bedridden pretty much for the next week. Well, it wasn't a few days after we were here, I was back in the hospital with bowel problems. I hadn't had a bowel movement in about 10 days. So they were worried about that. Things started messing up inside. I couldn't go to the bathroom very easy anymore. So I went back to the hospital and they took care of that. They got me cleaned out, you know, and made sure I was urinating fine. Sent me back home. I was the same problem, you know, couldn't keep anything down. I was sick all the time, real weak. I couldn't get out of bed. They gave me some medicine to help deal with that. But even to now's date, I still can't eat well. I still get sick. I still get dizzy, you know, so I have a little bit of after effects of it too.
How are your kidneys doing now?
My kidney functions were actually just right at, if not better than what before the snake bite.
Good.
So I bounced back very well.
So yeah, you know, that's the best recovery you could hope for then.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I just did my lab work today, so I'll know in the next week, you know, what they show from there. I think this is my 6 month checkup, something like that, 5 month. So hopefully everything stays on track.
So is there any ongoing issues other than obviously you're missing a couple of fingers?
Yeah, I do a lot of remodeling, so then holding that hammer has been a little rough.
Oh, you got to relearn things, huh? What's been the biggest adjustment to your everyday activity missing those two fingers?
Everyday activity missing these two fingers, I just have to relearn how to hold everything. A cup of coffee, I can no longer hold because you hold it with your first finger and it just wants to turn. Writing, I'm right-handed, so that's been a real learning curve to hold it between the two fingers, and then I kind of got to hold it with my other hand to shape my hand. So those are kind of everyday things. And then, you know, it may sound funny, but time for the BM time, you know, I'm right-handed, so that's been a little bit odd to get used to for the left hand.
So are you starting to become a little bit ambidextrous now?
Absolutely.
Because you're forced into it.
I'm forced, yeah. Yeah, even when I do use my right hand a lot with these two fingers and the thumb, I get super worn out. You know, my hand cramps, you know. It kind of draws in from a previous issue. I had Guillain-Barré about 7 years ago that I got a lot of nerve damage from. So my pinky draws in, so it's just kind of my two fingers. So they get worn out.
So you're using different muscles than you normally would.
Yeah. Have. Yeah. And it reminds me of somebody with real bad arthritis, the way my two fingers kind of work now, you know, they have to do everything.
Yeah. So you've got a few ongoing things, but still, boy, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And it was headed that way, you know, luckily I'm here.
What would have been the correct way to get rid of that snake's head?
Now that I know, see, I grew up around snakes. I didn't want to kill the snake. I just wanted to move them. But I felt like my wife, you know, her life was in danger. So the correct move would have been to dig a hole, you know, right. It was a rock garden that we were working in. But digging a hole about a foot and burying a head immediately. That would have been the correct version, you know, instead of leaving it on the ground, you know, or trying to move it with a stick or, you know, that would have been correct. Buried in the ground.
But you were trying to get rid of it. Were you partly concerned because maybe your dogs would find it?
I'm very concerned. My dogs are very aware, and they would have went straight to that head. And no, I've got a service dog, and he would have picked it up, defending me, standing next to me. So I don't know that they could have survived it. Hopefully it would have given me all the venom and they would have been fine. But
right.
You know, I was worried if one of them got bit, and it would have killed them, you know?
Right.
So yeah. I reached down for that stick, you know, and the stick was large. I never in a million years figured that snake would have done that, you know, turned around and got me like that.
Yeah, when it was that far away of you, from you, especially. That's wow. Yeah.
The correct way it would be been to bury it, but we had met somebody before that had the same thing happen to him. He was carrying it with his shovel to the burn pile, and it somehow slid down the handle and latched onto his hand with carrying it on the shovel. So we talked to him quite a bit too, and became friends. And it's just, you never know what kind of things can happen.
What a weird thing to have in common with somebody.
Right? Yep.
Is there any one factor you can think of that meant you survived this rather than dying?
One factor, right? You know, just the love for life. You know, I'm super positive. I'm a very good neighbor, friend, family. I think I'm here for my wife. Me and her have been a bond for 27 years now. So I definitely wouldn't want to leave her behind. I got two new grandbabies, you know. I got purpose here to come back to.
You got a lot to live for.
Yeah, that's for sure.
That's great. All right, Jeremy. Well, I appreciate you coming on and telling your story, and I'm glad things worked out the way they did.
Okay, thanks, Scott. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks for listening to this episode. My goal for each show is to introduce you to people and stories that you just won't find on other podcasts. If you want to help support the show, you just need to subscribe, and that way you'll never miss an episode. You can click on any of the subscribe buttons on the website, which is whatwasthatlike.com. You'll see all the links right there at the top where you can subscribe directly to this show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, or on whatever app you use to catch your podcasts. And you'll see there are also links to Twitter and Instagram, so you can follow us there, and I hope you do. And if you really want to connect with me and get in on the discussion with other listeners to this show, you can join our private Facebook group. You can find that at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. And of course, you can always email me directly at scott@whatwasthatlike.com, or just go to the website and click on contact. I'd love to hear what you think of this episode or a previous episode. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you on the next show where we'll once again ask the question, what was that like?